Hey there, Marina.
Hi, Simone. How's it going?
Pretty good. I want to see if you know what these three things have in common. Okay, I'm going to quiz you. Are you ready?
Okay, ready.
Okay, so what does fan death in South Korea, which basically involved a fan running all night killing people via asphyxiation, like mm-hmm. it would dehydrate them mm-hmm. as they slept. Mm-hmm. Outbreaks of Koro in China, Southeast Asia, Africa, the US, and Europe. And Koro, of course, is a psychological disease in which you think that your penis is shrinking. Mm-hmm. And the Monkey Man of New Delhi, who was a monster who apparently rampaged through New Delhi in 2001, appearing by night and randomly attacking people. What do those things all have in common?
Well, they sound like things you'd have nightmares about.
Oh, yes.
They sound like they could also be, I don't know, reasons to cause people to freak out.
Indeed!
I think there's a term for it. Mass hysteria. collective hysteria.
Yes.
Paranoia. Obsessive fear.
Yep.
But all along the lines of, you know, basically an entire group of people is somehow convinced that an ailment is going to bring about the destruction
exactly.
of something very near and dear to them.
So true.
You know,
they're all mass hysteria.
Yeah, they are. Wow, I'm pretty smart. I guessed it on the first try.
You are a genius.
Awesome.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about some of those examples, I suppose, because they make me uneasy.
Yeah, you know, like in, it's hilarious. We've basically realized today, as we've done a little bit of research for this podcast, that humans are very excitable. And if sort of given the suggestion that something terribly dangerous and strange is going awry, we will jump on that bandwagon and we will freak out with everyone else. So, you know, in 1997, it seems kind of ridiculous that an electric fan, you know, just the kind that blows when it's hot, is actually going to kill people. But people were really convinced of this, and it kind of took over the media. And, I mean, Koro, that's been plaguing men for a long time, because they just start freaking out, and if someone else they know is freaking out about it, then you start looking, and you're like, oh my god, mine is smaller too. I mean, it just, you know, and then the Monkey Man, I don't even want to go there. But basically, what we're going to talk about is some events of mass hysteria throughout history, and we'll talk about them, and then we'll kind of talk about what's going on now. And we'll
talk about them sort of in the context of three different hubs that we read
exactly.
on hub pages, all outlining sort of the effects and the effects of mass hysteria, but also highlighting several very both historical and real-time modern examples of when they have occurred.
Hilarious. And many of them we have lived through as a collective society. But before we get started on our first hub-related mass hysteria, or the one that there's a hub about, I want to talk about one of my favorites, okay?
Sure.
Because it's really funny. it's one of the earliest ones that I know of also. It's called The Dancing Plague of 1518. And, okay, so this is how it went down, Marina. So, the setting is beautiful Strasbourg in Alsace in France. And this one woman, right? She just starts dancing and she can't stop. And then soon, you know, a couple, like six people join her. They can't stop either. By the end of the month, 14 people, or no, sorry, not 14, 400 people were dancing and could not stop. And the, you know, the priests and the doctors in the area were like, okay, this is not astrological. We can be sure of that. You know, this is a sickness of boiling blood, and the only way to get rid of it is for more dancing.
Oh,
for more dancing.
Wow.
So they actually set up designated dancing areas and paid for bands to play to keep them dancing. And several people died from exhaustion, heart attacks, strokes. I mean,
it didn't make any sense.
And people have gone back and studied this event. They thought, you know, a lot of bits of mass hysteria have been tied to ergotism, or ergot, which is that mold that grows on rye when it gets damp. that makes people hallucinate. They don't think it was that because ergotism actually makes you weaker and can lead to uncoordinated movement. And it's very clear in the records that these people were dancing. I mean, they looked alarmed and distressed, but they were dancing, darn it.
Yes.
So it can be the basic conclusion for this very strange event is that these people were definitely suffering from mass hysteria, or rather a subset of it called mass psychogenic illness.
Mm-hmm.
In which you really just think you're ill, but you're not.
Yes.
And the thing that's really alarming and fascinating at once about this to me is that you think that you're, you know, sick and you're not really sick, but it can still kill you because some of these people died from dancing. They danced to death.
Well, two things. One, that's kind of awesome. I don't know.
Yes!
Dancing's pretty...
I mean, if I'm going to die, I want to dance to death.
I would be perfectly happy dancing myself to death. And second, I find it remarkable that in 1518, when, 14 people had to share a potato to eat, the city hall or council spent money to create these designated dancing facilities.
Actually, Marina, you people. Make a fascinating point there about the potato. I never thought I'd say that.
Mm-hmm.
But... this was actually a time of disease and famine, and people were taking out loans, and they were starving, and they were begging. They actually think one of the big things that can cause psychogenic illness and mass hysteria...
are those conditions?
Is, well, high stress.
Yeah.
People are just kind of slap happy and, you know, crazy because they're super stressed out. So I think this is a theme that we'll see throughout all these mass hysteria things, but you make a good... I mean, yeah, it is kind of crazy that they, like... paid for a band.
Ah, yes, I forgot about the band.
But still, it was a very stressful time, and I think we'll see that a lot with these mass hysteria events discussed in the hubs. I guess let's start with the first hub.
Let's
right?
do it. Sluster Bubble, what do you got for us?
We've got the Salem Witches and Mass Hysteria. So, first of all, Sluster Bubble, awesome name.
I love that name. Way to go on picking the best Hub Pages username ever. I did not just say that. But it is a great one.
It's Sluster Bubble. Woo.
Yes.
It's almost as great a word as axolotl.
Almost.
Yeah. Not quite, though. Sorry, Sluster Bubble. But, okay, so Salem. Not the world's happiest place in the world.
Nope.
So let's set the scene for this stressful situation. You can see already the dominoes are set up to fall. Salem congregation was difficult.
It was. There were always issues and disputes between neighbors for years and years. In fact, three ministers had left the parish in 20 years, supposedly because it was just so darn difficult to get along in Salem.
They couldn't handle it, you know.
And a bunch of jerks rule in Salem, and apparently this town was just a hotbed for dispute.
Yeah. Eventually, though, they found a reverend that really worked for them. a Reverend Samuel Paris was ordained finally in 1689, and he was kind of a jerk with the rest of the town, so they really got along well, and he just loved to blame sinners just for just putting a toe out of line.
Yeah.
You'd be a sinner! Which worked perfectly for creating this terrible situation. Because unfortunately, in 1692, his daughter and his niece began behaving strangely.
Like, for example, they would start throwing things, muttering, crawling, complaining of being stabbed and pinched. I don't know how old these two were at the time, but it sounds like pretty standard.
I think they were like tweens, which is pretty standard tween behavior.
It's pretty standard. This was just totally... normal for tweens of our modern age, but
yep.
Anyhow, it was considered unusual at the time, and of course everyone jumped to conclude that it was witchcraft.
Obviously.
I mean, they're girls.
Yeah.
They're being weird.
Yeah.
And they're complaining, so yeah. Clearly it's their fault, and if not their fault, somebody must have possessed them with something.
Well, that's the trouble, because the girls totally started blaming people. In fact, they blamed A total of over 150 people over the course of the Salem witch trials.
Maybe they saw that their dad and slash uncle was just so successful
they just
with
took
blaming
after his example,
that they
yeah.
wanted to get a head start.
I know. I mean, I'm sure he was really proud because he was like, oh, my poor daughter, my poor niece, you're being tortured. And then they got all this attention. And then the more people they blamed, the more power they got. So
yes.
Yep.
Eventually, 19 people were hanged.
Can you believe that?
One was crushed to death.
Yeah, under rocks.
Is that different from stoning, or is that
a form of
stoning?
I guess it's kind of a form of stoning. It's really slow, though. I mean, like, they laid him down, and they put a ton of rocks on top of him.
And then jumped on him?
Well, then they kind of just walked away. They were like, see you, dude.
That's...
I've been to Salem. I don't ever want to go back. It was just so depressing. I went to all the museums, and I was like, this is going to be so cool and spooky. And then my friends and I could just kind of stop talking to each other.
Just kind of morbid. 7 were imprisoned, by the way. So a lot of, you know, good number of people were affected by...
Well, and the homeless, too. You know, like people who were... just maybe not fitting in with society.
Yes.
Those were the ones who were targeted first, like those who didn't go to church a lot.
Those who didn't go to church, those who just sort of seemed weird for whatever arbitrary reason people were able to point at them.
Yeah, she looked at me funny. Witch!
So, anyhow.
So that's an example of early and very famous American mass hysteria. But of course, Celestia Bubble talked about some more modern iterations, because Celestia Bubble saying, oh, you'd think, right, that these were just backward people from the days of yore who had no idea what was going on and were obviously starving or crazy, you know, and we've, as modern society, totally gone beyond that.
Yes. I mean, we can dismiss most things that we, you know, can't explain that happened back then.
Yeah.
By just saying people were dumb back then.
Yeah, except that we're just as dumb now.
Exactly. We, at least along these lines, we have really helped bring the tradition home.
So let's jump a couple of hundred years.
Let's do it.
About 1938, huh?
1938, Orson Welles' presentation of War of the Worlds, which was part of a radio broadcast, right, of an ongoing... an ongoing anthology called Mercury Theater on the Air,
You're good on this.
Well, Wikipedia helps us in life.
It really does.
I needed to figure out the context, and I guess it was just an hour long.
Have you heard bits of it? It's fantastic.
I've heard bits of it in other pop culture settings,
right,
but I have not heard it as a primary
source. I have to say, radio dramas of the time were fantastic, except I think this was very forward-thinking in the way that it... was like reality radio drama.
Right. And I read the fact that it was like a 60-minute not interrupted by commercials broadcast helped kind of fuel that element of reality, and people would get so zoned in.
So real that they, you know, if you didn't tune in the beginning where they're like, and now a story, you know?
Yeah.
And then they just tune in and they're like, aliens, they're invading and this is terrible. No wonder that people kind of started freaking out, except that the hysteria that resulted from it is super... I heard that people jumped out of windows and there were mobs that the police could barely control because people thought, this is it, guys.
Yeah, people believed that an actual alien invasion was taking place as a result.
It's crazy.
It is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And sort of jumping 12 years ahead... We have Senator McCarthy's hearing surrounding the communist astral spectra.
So embarrassing.
Yes.
Just let's not even talk about that. It makes me angry.
Just a whoops.
Yeah.
Going 42 years ahead, 150 disabled children received packed lunches in Florida. I'm already scared. I don't know about you.
Yeah. I mean, just one
where
started
these lunches
feeling
come
sick
from?
And, you know, oh no. And, well, then suddenly 63 in total were complaining of headaches and tingling and stomach cramps. They were transported to hospitals. Everyone was totally alarmed. And then they found that nothing was wrong with the food. And these kids had no real, like,
they probably just didn't want to do their multiplication tables. I mean,
probably. I mean, I guess... I mean, it's interesting to see how many of these mass hysteria events are caused by children. Well, and by women, unfortunately. They're often caused by women.
Well, it's
But you can see as a child, though, you're so I feel like empathetic and imaginative. And you know when someone would come up to you with a needle or something as a kid and you would already hurt? Just the idea, the anticipation of it, your imagination is so powerful. I could totally see how mass hysteria could really start with them.
Yes, it's true. And it's the idea of needing to protect our children that I think causes a lot of the same thought that, you know, we need to protect all of these other values that if they become threatened existentially, you know, if there's no way to... It's sort of like the magnitude of the event outweighs any sort of logical sort of out
it's
that it might not happen.
It's the children. They're in danger.
Yeah,
it's They're just, so often used as a crutch that way.
They are.
It just hits people, and they have to defend their spawn.
It's true. I mean, even, you know, well, Fox News as an outlet may or may not employ some of these strategies, but let's not get into that. One thing they have done is at least, you know, bring about this discussion of music affecting children, listening to certain gangster rap, and similarly with video games and sort of watching violence. And although they haven't led to these, you know, mass hysteria freakouts like some of the other events, it just goes to show that if the kids are going to die, then people really will take it to the next level.
They will be just viscerally alarmed. I mean, again, though, I mean, another one of the very popular mass hysteria examples was in 1999, just a couple of years after this this Florida packed lunch event where some school children in Europe complained of being sick after drinking Coca-Cola. Eventually, 250 people developed similar complaints. Five different schools in which this happened, and there was no trace of any poisoning. Eventually, Coca-Cola, after doing a lot of research, said, well, we might have used the wrong carbon dioxide.
I thought that was pretty funny.
How do you use the wrong carbon dioxide? I don't even know, but it wouldn't have caused any of the actual symptoms that these kids were complaining of. So it's another example of kids just taking it a little bit too far. But let's take a little jump back to the 50s, because there's this really fascinating hub called Seattle's 1954 Mass Hysteria, and it's written by JY3502. He does a ton of historical hubs, and they're all packed with information. I don't know. He's some huge history buff, because the stuff
this,
he puts together...
I didn't know that this was... that this happened, and I was just... It's obviously in line with kind of what we'd expect from... you know, herds of people reacting to something that they find so terrifying. But, I mean, anyhow, for those of you that don't know, and as JY3502 explains very well, this was an example of mass media causing mass hysteria.
Kind of connects with our whole Fox News.
Exactly, which is kind of my idea of what the more common modern-day manifestation of this is, but... Regardless, it all began in March of 1954 when local newspapers began reporting on an unusual number of pitted windshields occurring in the area.
Yeah, you know, like just those little, like, it looks like stones have hit it.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, little dense cracks.
Yeah.
Anyway, it became known as the Seattle windshield pitting epidemic.
It sounds scary already.
It does. It sounds terrifying. And obviously, residents and police were baffled by a sudden rise in the number of pitted windshields. I guess this just started happening really quickly. they were blamed. Ah, here we go again, blaming.
Blaming.
Where? Who did this?
You gotta blame.
So they were blamed, first of all, on vandals with BB guns. It escalated and police began setting up roadblocks.
Looking for these vandals with BB guns.
Yes, 75 Marines were sent to assist.
Well, the hoodlums are hard
Once
to control.
Again, a great use of resources. you know, more cases were reported. You know, everyone started noticing that they had pitted windshields as well. Drivers began stopping people in the streets, and police officers trying to cause these reports.
Yeah, hey, look, my car too, me. It's happening to me.
And of course, the most ridiculous part is that people started blaming this on all sorts of things because, well, when there's no real explanation other than this happens to cars.
I know, so if it's not hoodlums, then maybe it's cosmic rays or
gremlins.
Gremlins! Because clearly gremlins are... They're even worse than hoodlums. Well, maybe.
naval radio transmissions was used.
Sand flea eggs. God. Come on, guys. We can be a little bit more creative. But apparently it started in March and then stopped by around April 17th. It just stopped. But in the process, 3,000 windshields were reported damaged. So it turns out this was actually nothing out of the ordinary. People get pitted windshields all the time. But thanks to the media making a big deal out of it, suddenly everyone thought, oh, well, okay, my windshield just got pitted. This isn't normal. This never happens. It must be a gremlin.
I just love the word choice of epidemic. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, media.
Thanks, media. Thanks, Seattle media. Anyhow, thanks, JY3502, for that.
Yeah, I didn't know about the Seattle.
Great example.
One. Fascinating. But let's, I guess we're around the 50s. Let's move to another hub by Kentucky Sloan called Mass Hysteria, the End of the World, Witch Trials, and Satanic Rituals. And she talks about a bunch of more events of mass hysteria. One of them being for World War II, which I never really thought of this as mass hysteria, but it totally was.
It is.
It's with the Third Reich saying that they need to let the master race just take over and destroy every other race. That was definitely hysteria because people were either jumping on the bandwagon and saying, yeah, you know, Deutschland über alles, or they were like running for their lives.
I'm screwed.
Yes.
I mean, when it gets to that level, then, you know, all that really needs to be threatened is your individual life, essentially.
Well, I mean, how different
identity.
Is it from the Salem witch trials, right? Because they were persecuting those who were different.
Yeah.
Or who they saw as different.
So people had an incentive to look out for themselves and just sort of jump on the train.
Yeah, it was you. You would have to blame someone and you would have to get with the crazy, crazy, scary people, or you would have to be killed. I never thought of it as mass hysteria, but it definitely was. And I think that was another mass hysteria fueled by the media, in this case, really propaganda.
Propaganda,
but still.
Yeah.
It's so much of what mass hysteria is spin.
It is.
It's taking something and saying, oh, these girls are twitching and they're freaked out. It must be witches. Or these people are dancing. Let's make them dance more because that's the only way they can get it out of their systems.
It's spin, and it's the idea that you're speaking with just absolute authority on a subject that, you know, people themselves aren't willing to or too afraid to research and figure out for themselves, and they just sort of latch on to that authority.
Good point about the whole researching for yourself.
A
good example of that's with the satanic ritual abuse hysteria in the 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently it stemmed from a book called Michelle Remembers, where an author, eventually it was debunked, but she basically asserted with this book that she had these repressed memories of being kidnapped, raped, and tortured in satanic rituals. I can't believe she said this really happened. Because what happened after that was this book was used as like a case for social workers.
Yeah.
And when social workers thought that someone was out there doing this, they were looking for non-existent but suggestible repressed memories in the people that they worked with.
Yep. And as soon as they found examples, there is something that might have appeared in line with the book, it caused this sort of domino effect once again of...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's so easy to create mass hysteria around this, too, because it's like, oh, no, you don't remember this, of course, but it's a repressed memory. Mm-hmm. You were totally kidnapped and raped and tortured by satanic, pagan, demon people.
Gremlins. That would not be fun, sorry.
Yeah. No, but I mean, and this wasn't just people freaking out about it or maybe some weird, you know, misdiagnosed cases. This led to a full-out panic. Families were torn apart. A preschool was shut down because they thought that some of these people were kidnapping torturing the kids. And, I mean, employees were tried. I think one person was jailed for 5 years, despite the fact that everyone was eventually acquitted.
Yeah.
These are real consequences. I mean, no, people aren't dancing to death in this case, but still.
It is. It's remarkable how quickly these things initiate and grow, and then when they're dismissed for a valid reason, you know, such as the example of the preschool being shut down, everyone was acquitted, or the example of the Coca-Cola or the lunch packages where nothing was found in the actual food or drink. It just kind of like withers away and no one talks about it until the next thing springs along and then everyone latches on again.
I know. It's embarrassing.
It is pretty embarrassing.
But one of the things,
shame on humans.
Trends in history, and I love how history repeats itself. So at least we can take comfort in this.
We can.
And maybe with a little bit of perspective, we can separate ourselves from a panic when it's happening.
It's true.
But still, recent, 1999, yep. Y2K, another famous one. People totally thought that the world was going to collapse because of computer shutdowns.
And I just remember sort of, you know, this was when we were what? We were 11, 12 years old.
Yeah, I remember. I was playing Roller Coaster Tycoon and thinking about it.
Yeah, I was, I remember being taken to a New Year's Eve party with my parents. And, you know, no one there cared that Y2K was dead. But I remember, like, the 3 seconds before in the countdown.
Everyone's like, oh, crap.
I was just sort of, you know, I looked around and, we didn't, like, the building didn't blow up. Like, my computer, as crappy as it was at the time, was still intact when we got home. canned food was unnecessary. But Y2K was... That was
mass hysteria.
That was the most recent one I could remember, you know.
Ah, but there was something even more recent, my dear Marina.
Oh, wait, is it some other end of the world thing?
It's the second coming, my dear friend.
Oh, of course. How could I forget and thank Harold Camping for that?
Harold Camping. He's actually a local. HubPages is based in San Francisco. And Harold Camping is of Family Radio Network, which is based in Oakland, California, right across the beautiful bay. And I have to say, the Honorable Harold Camping, who has predicted the second coming in the early 90s, it didn't come. But then in 2011, actually hails from Alameda, my hometown. I grew up there.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So he's an Alamedan. So am I. Awesome things come from Alameda. But basically, this became a little bit of mass hysteria, not because anyone actually believed him, because this guy kind of has a bad track record. But because he put up billboards everywhere and signs on buses everywhere that kept saying, the second coming is, you know, on its way, or, oh, what was it, Judgment Day is near.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember all those billboards? They were everywhere.
I do, but I remember how, I believe, I cannot be certain, but I think that Camping inspired Woody Harrelson's character in 2012. And, he was just the crazy person that, like, lived in a van and broadcasted it and said if people were going to die.
Oh, but Harold Camping lives actually in a really nice neighborhood of Alameda. He's doing all right.
I'm sure he's doing
he's
pretty well for
really
himself.
He's also really old. He's very old. I think he's in his 90s.
Oh.
So well, his second coming might be on its way. But, well, Harold, we love you. Let's not forget what the media did with this event, right? Because... Okay, this guy put up a bunch of windshields.
Mm-hmm.
And, sorry, windshields. I think you
were
the pinning. He put billboards on buses that had windshields. And he put up billboards that you could see through windshields. But the media picked up on this.
Not in Seattle.
And started talking about it. Not in Seattle. But the media talked about it in mm-hmm. Seattle. The media talked about it everywhere.
Yes.
And it even got to the point where people were making very big changes. People had given all of their money to Camping for his campaign, just thinking, well, May 21st is right around the corner. We don't need our money anymore.
Mortgage their properties and...
Yeah, let's fly into the heavens when the second coming happens. So people actually did that, and I think this also ties back into this whole stress causing mass hysteria, because people are dealing with unemployment. They're dealing with incredible debts. And this idea of the second coming arriving is kind of convenient because, well, okay, so I'm, you know, $700,000 in debt. I just lost my job, but the second coming is on its way. And you could see how easy it would be to throw all of your beliefs behind that. And a lot of people did. In fact, even some businesses sprouted up around the second coming. Have you heard about them?
No, I have not.
They're great, actually, because a lot of people who believed, legitimately believed, who were part of this mass hysteria were like, well, what about Fido? Because, I mean, animals can't go to heaven. So they actually created, some people who were enterprising, a service that you pay $100 and something, and give these people your address. And if the second coming came, their promise to you as atheists would be to come and pick up your animals and take care of them.
Oh, how convenient.
Yeah, because they weren't going to heaven. They're, you know, atheists. So there were services that a lot of people bought into to take care of their, you know, assets and their pets after they flew up into... Right? You fly up or you... I don't know what you do.
I'm not sure. I mean, I picture it as flying up.
That's what, like, the billboards show, I think, so...
But I mean, yeah, why would you need your own money in the second coming?
Yeah, so it caused real damage is what I'm saying, though. And of course, May 21st of this year, as both of you and I are still around to say this stuff, the second coming didn't really happen.
It didn't
happen. That said, Harold Camping just moved the date back. He was like, oh, wait, guys, there was a mistake. It is actually October 21st, 2011.
Okay, well, I guess we'll have to wait until... Wait. Today is October 21st.
Yep.
Oh,
This is awkward.
Wait, I think I see some things falling out of the sky out the window, Simone. No.
Oh, crap.
Oh, no.
Why did we say those things? We believe.
I think this was a valiant effort, but alas...
This is our last podcast ever.
Maybe it happens at like sunset or something. I'm sure there is some technicality here that we're missing. I mean, it's only 4:19.
Oh, dude, PM. We've got. Oh, it was fun.
It was fun. I'm glad that we were able to do this.
Yeah.
I'm glad we were able to talk about this subject on such an appropriate day.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
And, well, I guess...
It was good.
It was good. I guess I better just go figure out what I'm going to do with all my belongings and finances.
Yeah, got to sort that out. You've only got... We don't know. It could be any moment. And how awkward would it be to, you know, see people flying into the sky before you get all your stuff in order?
That would be really awkward. I want to get there early because I want to make sure that I, you know,
well, you don't want to, like,
get a good setup and
butts as you fly up.
I don't want to see their butts, and I don't want it to, you know, compete with them for resources up there, down there.
You know, there can't be that much room. Oh, down there. There's plenty of room down there.
Yeah, maybe I'll go down. We'll see.
I mean, in Dante's Inferno, like, all the cool people are down there. It's very interesting.
Dante's Inferno.
Yeah, you know where he talks about.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I got that confused with Dante's Peak, which was another topic we discussed in a previous podcast.
Oh, wasn't that podcast the end of the world?
It is. It was. And I was laughing to myself while we were discussing mass hysteria. While a couple weeks ago we were talking about the most likely scenario for the end of the world. And what do you know? I guess it's today.
Yep, it's today. Well, I guess there's not much more we can say. We've got to get our affairs in order. But if you have any moments, you know, that you would like to spend emailing us in your last moments of being alive, if you ever do hear this podcast, why don't you email us about any time in your life where you might have been caught up in mass hysteria or exposed to mass hysteria and how you reacted to it. You can send all of your experiences to podcast@hubpages.com. And if we live to see another day, we would love to hear from you.
Good luck.